You're listening to CKUW 95.9 Winnipeg.
The following is an encore presentation from CKUW's archives. Join us next week when the regular host will be back with a new episode of original programming.
How long will I love you? As long as stars are above you. Longer if I can. How long will I need you? As long as the seasons need to follow their plan. How long will I be with you? As long as the sea is bound to wash upon the sand. As long as you want me to, and longer by far. How long will I hold you? As long as your father told you.
Good Friday morning, folks, and if it's 11 a.m., we're a little bit late today, but that's okay. You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, your community radio station, and if it is 11 a.m. on Friday and you're here, you're listening to the Hope Alley of No Fixed Address show. We're all about talking about issues of homelessness, poverty, addictions, mental health, issues that plague a lot of folks and are never really given a chance to rise above. So, and sometimes don't have voices to speak for themselves, so we kind of have to do that for them. Today, I have a young man who I've been trying to get on air for a while, and we finally done it. Casper, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. First of all, by the way, I think it's, I don't see the temperature. What is it? It's 17 degrees, and I think it headed for a high of 21, 22, which is going to be a really nice day. But if you're out there all the time, you know it's not a really nice day ever. But Casper, happy to have you on. I know that you've been affiliated with RAE for a little while, and you know, a really good organization that that does work tremendously hard and for youth. But as I ask every single guest that comes on the show, just give me what you care to share, what you're comfortable sharing, as a bit of your past in a brief synopsis, and we'll get into it all later. I promise you, I will not ask you anything that will embarrass you or that you will not want to be questioned on. But just give us a little snapshot of your early life. How old are you now, Casper, if you don't mind me asking?
I am 22 as of this year.
Yes, I understand. That's what I thought I heard you say last time. But you've been through a lot for your age. Just maybe give me a bit of a, give my listeners a bit of a background on your early adult life, and beyond that, if you like, if you care to.
Yeah, sir, I can do that. Okay. So my name is Casper Harper. I come from Red Circle Lake First Nations. We are in Treaty 5. It is not in Ontario, but it is 400 kilometers northeast of Winnipeg.
Okay.
And we use Perimeter Airlines, well, Perimeter Aviation, but yeah. My early adult life started out here in Winnipeg as I was, you know, young adult, just looking to make a life, you know.
Okay, yes.
Getting the independent living kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in foster care for a bit with the Island Lake First Nations Family Services, and yeah, things got a little out of hand, whereas I started to fall into the abuse of alcohol, mm-hmm. and yeah, finally got...
Probably easy to do up there, I would think.
Yes, it's more easier if you have, like, a lot of influence surrounding you, mm-hmm. whether it's people who want to drink or people sure. who want to do drugs, et cetera.
Right.
But, yeah, got cut by AYA and wasn't able to, you know, graduate from school
okay.
due to that, to the alcohol abuse. And, yeah, other than that, been hanging around in Winnipeg for a bit, just trying to make a life for myself. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, other than that... my early adulthood life in Winnipeg hasn't been that hard, but it's good to be surrounded by the community that I surround myself in.
Of course. That's the outside influences are always vital, right? And they kind of help determine where you're at, unless you're extremely strong and can manage. But it's I know that you did get involved with Ray. At what point in time did that happen, and why did you get in touch with Ray, which okay, is a resource assistance for youth?
Yeah, it's located in 125 Sherbrooke.
Yes.
And yeah, the reason why I got involved was because in the CFS system, I was still just about aging out, and mm-hmm. I finally wanted to leave the group home that I was in way right. down the south area. So, yeah, things weren't going so well there with me and the other group home people, but, yeah, it didn't go out so smoothly. But, yeah, my then CFS worker gave me a call telling me that there was a spot open for YRCs for the next two weeks because prior to that year of 2021, mm-hmm. it was already December, like mid-December by that time. And yeah, so he's the reason why I got in touch with Ray, because he knew that there was a rapid rehousing program going on, and
yes.
I wanted to get my own apartment before I turned 18. So yeah, eventually
okay.
it turned out to happen, and a day before I turned 18, boom, I got the apartment. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, ever since then, I've been involved with Ray, and yeah.
So many times, young adults get booted off CFS and are not as fortunate as yourself. How did you find the system with CFS? And I know I've spoken to other young people at Ray and who have not had the success that you have had. And while they're on CFS, they had apartments and they had their own life kind of thing, of course, with guidance. But then as soon as they turned the age to get out, they were booted out of the apartment type of thing, or you know, left on their own to get on services and all that kind of stuff. And found themselves back in marginalized living, if not on the street. Do you feel that you're fortunate to escape that kind of situation?
Well, to answer your first question, I did not find CFS. I would say for the majority of people who are still in CFS, mm-hmm. they never had a choice, nor did they ever find that it was CFS that found them.
So okay.
That would be a bit of a bold statement, but that's just for me.
Okay,
but, yeah.
You know, I understand that it has been difficult for many, many people, right? That's
yeah.
That's common knowledge kind of thing, I think. Or not common knowledge, but common to us, in, you know, who work within the sector. It's so many times. I mean, it's the one, I think it has been the biggest broken system within the provincial welfare and healthcare system, I think, because so many people just come out and find themselves on the street. I've heard so many stories like that, and I'm so happy that that you ended up with Ray. How did they help you along in staying? Are you still in your apartment now?
This was a rapid rehousing program.
Okay,
and,
yes.
It only went on for a year and a half. So,
okay.
as soon as my as soon as came to the deadline, you know, there wasn't really much options for them to help me out in that situation other than you know, get like you know, a moving trailer.
Okay.
But during that time, I never actually knew that I was supposed to be looking for a different apartment. Okay. So yeah.
Did you find a second another apartment after that one?
Eventually, I did, and that didn't work out so well in 2024. But yeah, took a long break from that year and headed out to my reserve. And
okay.
Finally returned this year as of April. No, last year of April.
It's not been easy.
Yeah.
My goodness, you know, and so many, and you're so young as well, and I found myself on the street for like 30 months, right? But I was an older guy already, and but I feel sorry for young people who just haven't really experienced a great deal of life yet to have a struggle to keep you in housing and to be moving around like you did. How long did you stay on reserve?
I stayed in my reserve for a good 8 months until I finally had it with the ongoing drug abuse going on out there, and along with the family situation. So decided, you know what, time for another escape. So yeah.
Are you in housing now? If I may ask.
I am in housing. Yes.
Okay, and was that through Ray or through some other auspices? Or?
It was a collaboration between Ray and EIA.
Okay.
Well, I wouldn't say collaboration, but
no, of course.
It was Ray who helped me out.
It's hard to collaborate with EIA.
Yes, they're actually a collaboration.
They're actually a detriment, I think, for the most part.
Yeah.
I do know that they have some good people there. I do some work down at the library, and they come in, and the people that I see are really willing and wanting to really help people within the system, but there are so many barriers with EIA that it's a detriment to anything decent, I guess. What they pay is you know, beyond belief, as bad as or as low as the EIA income is. It makes it hard for people to eat and stay in shelter at the same time.
It's an unfortunate choice that most people have to make just to get on EIA, but
yes,
with the whole you know, navigation through that system, you'd have to have all these papers and these other things about yourself, and it's a big barrier for people. So.
Oh, it is.
Yeah,
and you know, a lot of, you know, one of the problems is a lot of people don't have the articulate skills to speak to that person across to the glass from them, and it leads to a lot of animosity, or it leads to the case manager for EIA getting upset and not treating the person with respect that they should. And I, you know, I've been down that road after 29 months of homelessness or 30 months of homelessness. I ended up on EIA for five years, and till I could get my got over the trauma of homelessness, right?
Yeah.
I was out there for 30 months, and because I could articulate, I didn't have the same difficulties that I saw other people having, and the relationships breaking down between the welfare worker and the person trying to get on welfare or on welfare and maybe missing appointments and stuff. But, you know, they make it so difficult even to make appointments, you know, because of the barriers of poverty and all that kind of stuff. Well, so what's your life like now, Casper?
My life right now, I wouldn't really want to complain about it. You know, it's just the way it goes for those fortunate enough to make it on EIA and have a budget to go with. And
right.
That's also a barrier, too. If you were to want to get a job while on EIA,
it's difficult.
Yeah, it is.
And so, as you only get to keep 30% of, or $200 was 30% of per month.
Yeah, for each dollar.
Yeah. It's horrible.
Yep.
they don't necessarily help you. I know just to get, you know, bus tickets to get back and forth to work, you actually have a promissory note that you actually have a job and all that kind of stuff. And then while they take their time trying to decide whether they're going to get bus tickets or transportation to get back and forth to work, meanwhile, you're taking money out of your food budget to get there. And I've been down that road, man. I know how difficult everything is. And I actually found being homeless more free than actually being on welfare and being in housing. I found it less stressful at times because they just make it impossible to eat and take care of the people that you have to support and your animals and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I would kind of see it like how I saw with CFS. Like you're under contract and you're a product of the system in the way I view it. But once you close your file from either EIA or CFS, it just makes you feel more free to do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Other than you have that dubious support, right? And you have that income, whatever it is.
Yeah, and my question is, like, where in this economy are you going to, like, have to accept that fact that it's okay to give only $240 per month?
Entirely.
So, I don't know. Maybe they should upgrade on their services, have more translators for those who are fluent, either French or indigenous, et cetera.
But entirely. And I think as you know, indigenous people get a worse break at times than others do as well, because they're just not respected as much, and there's still so much discrimination going on in our city. And there's one town called the most racist city in Canada, I believe that, but in that regard it goes everywhere. There is racism against everybody, but again, 75% of our homeless population is indigenous, and 90% of our population living beneath the poverty line is indigenous, and it's like a really overrepresentation of one ethnic group, and it's really sad. And do you have any comments on that? And I know people come down from the reserves to find a better life and don't find it here.
Well, my comment on that is, I saw a report back in my school. 70% of the crimes that happen in Winnipeg are because of indigenous people.
Yep.
And to comment on that, 75% in Winnipeg as a whole, or like in Manitoba, well,
in Winnipeg, as a whole.
In Winnipeg,
yeah.
Well, I would say, it's a very migrational part of the North American. So
yes,
yeah, I wouldn't say it's a bad thing or a good thing, but there is a lot of discrimination. I don't really like to use the R word in these ways.
No, I understand what you're saying.
There's a division between understanding one's ethnic background and what do you call it, language barriers, etc.
Yes. Yep.
And it's just part of like understanding how it goes in this city. So not much more to comment on it.
I appreciate that very much, and your discernment on that. Thank you. You sound like an educated person.
More illiterate than educated, but
but you speak well, you obviously you have been through a lot, and it shapes your opinion on a lot of things. I think one time you were talking about addiction, how difficult was that, and how did you manage to escape it? Or I know it's always an ongoing struggle. I know one person who is very intelligent. He's been on the street. He's got a PhD. But he fights it constantly. And, he's right now he's in a different city undergoing, 8 weeks of treatment. And things are really difficult for him. How have you found that process? And how have you found the process of, as Ray helped you on the side of staying on top of things? I'm just asking from a peer perspective of naivete, because I can't speak on addictions per se, so I'm asking you.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah, I can answer your question. So there has been a few addictions I've had in my life, but alcohol wouldn't really play a big part in it. Mm-hmm. But there was a drug I did get addicted to for a time being, and it started off with, me asking my mom for some of it too. So, being surrounded by that and having your own mother do it around you, even after like spending your child tax money and stuff, it got me to that point where I'm like, I'm curious, and why does it affect you that much? So, boom, I finally had it. And when I tried, boom, that's where the addiction feeling kind of takes place. And the thing with addiction is that the high doesn't stick around. You get to a certain point where you're so used to the rotation, the cycle of it, and boom, you start feeling like, man, is this really what I want to keep doing? But at that point, you don't really have a choice. You're kind of dependent on it. So,
yes.
Yeah, that was my situation with OxyContin, and yeah,
the way
I had to get rid of the addiction and whatnot is go through the night sweats, go through everything, don't ask for any money, and just go on through it. If I can do it the second time, I can do it the third time, and if I can do it the third time, well, I can go for a fourth, but
yeah.
I want to stay away from that.
Yeah, a friend of mine told me who went through the same thing. He said, "Failure is success because you only learn from your failures." He said, "Don't get pissed off. Don't get upset if you fail the first time. If you fail the second time. If you fail the third time." If you're determined to beat it, you're going to beat it. Of course, he said you need help to do it. But I really like that statement, failure is success, if you want to count it as, say, a stepping, one step after another, you know, to get to where you want to be. What is your comment on that?
My comment?
You don't have to agree. Clear period.
Well, my comment on that is I don't entirely disagree, nor do I agree, because it's one opinion to another.
Of course it is.
Yeah, so the way I would kind of phrase that question would be, without failure, there's no finding success, I guess.
Yes.
So without failing, how are you going to learn from any mistakes that you make when you're already winning, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, it's kind of an oxymoron statement, I would think. But, you know, there are many different ways of treating addictions. And a person runs a really tight ship. A relative of mine runs a really tight ship where, you know, he doesn't even allow marijuana because of Bible-based organization. And I disagree with that. Because I think that perhaps marijuana is a step down drug from some hard drugs. That's my opinion on that. And then you have other organizations like Bruce Oak, for example, who say, okay, if this is not for you, come stay a few days. If it's not for you, go away and come back when you're ready. But they force nothing on anyone. They have a program, of course, but it's they leave the choices up to the folks that are there, and it's not, they don't force anything on anyone, and they just give them support and care and all that kind of stuff. And they have so many graduates from Bruce Oak that it's a remarkable program, that they have a remarkable model. And I don't know, I feel that everything I do is based on that kind of approach, where you don't force anybody into anything because it never works. I don't know, what's your opinion on that? On that kind of
so
program?
with the Bruce Oaks thing, I'm not entirely familiar with what that organization is and what they do. All I can hear from what you're saying is that they have programs that provide the supports and treatment for those who are going through addiction. So
right.
With that said, if there's like a lot of graduates, congratulations on them. And yeah, I don't really have an opinion on that.
I appreciate it.
I will agree that they are running a tight firm and they're doing pretty good.
Yeah, thank you. Stay tuned, folks. We're just going to take a quick music break. And Casper, hang in there, and we'll come back for a few more minutes.
All right.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
sit with me, let's have a conversation. I wanna hear what you've got to say. You've got big dreams and hopes and fears and reservations that live with you each and every day. I wish that things were easier for you, truth be told. I wish I had it easier too. I wish that I could say one day you'll have it all together. Tell you what's in store for you. All I can do is ride beside you all the way. You don't have to hide your face with me. Who you are is all I'll ever want to see. When your legs get tired from running, I will carry you.
Folks, we are back at CKUW 95.9 FM, your community radio station right here at the University of Winnipeg, and you're listening to the Hope Alley of No Fixed Address Show with your host, Al, and magnificent producer, Debbie. And on the line today, we have a brilliant young man, Casper Harper, who as we've been talking about having him on the show for a while, it's finally happened. Casper, again, once again, thank you for coming on today.
Great to be on.
One of the things that really gnaws at me, and the province had to change laws in, had to change laws here in Manitoba to make it happen. And that was, well, they did two things. They set up addiction holding tank, per se. It's a jail, kind of. If you've been in there, it looks like a jail. They went from 24-hour, you know, hold, to, which was the lot, to 72 hours now. And I think that it's, and for most people, it's a violation of human rights. As a matter of fact, a doctor in Manitoba now is suing the province over human rights violations for folks that are being held there. What is your opinion on a 72-hour, if you have one, what is your opinion on a 72-hour hold instead of 24 hours? In my opinion, 72 hours is not going to clean anybody, and it just makes people go after their drugs harder. That's my opinion on it.
I mean, my opinion is if 24 hours is not enough, then what makes 72 hours more better?
Entirely. Entirely. I totally agree with that. There's nothing. And all it does is increase the desire to get a pick sooner. I think that I've never had that problem. I can't speak from knowledge, but this is what I'm getting from a lot of folks is they go after you know the drugs harder, and you know one of the problems we have in the city now is the rampant death situation with mortality rate. At one point, we had 30 mortalities in roughly 3 weeks, and it's just not getting better. And you know, people are blaming it on the fentanyl and the meth. And my question is it because of partially because of 72 hours? I'm not sure. I can't. You know, one death is too many, but we've had. Like 30 in 3 weeks, which is absolutely crazy. And I was on Hal Anderson's show. So many people don't know this. I was on Hal Anderson's show, and he was talking about the one death at MMF in the MMF storage unit. And I said, Hal, we've had like 30 in 3 weeks, and it's just going and going and going. And you know, he's shocked at that number, but this is the way it is these days. And you know, I hold a homeless memorial service every October, and I'd like you to come this year. I'll make sure you get a personal invite for those that have passed away in the last year, and on the streets. And we almost doubled our numbers this year of the names we read out and the names that we could find that people have passed away. And we're going to probably hit 300 deaths this year, if not more, I'm sure. Well, what is your opinion on all that?
I couldn't form much of a mm-hmm. better opinion than those who already spoke it out. But, mm-hmm. you know, we like you said, we can't force these people to stop what they're doing, mm-hmm. and nor do they have much of a choice. But, you know, it's like, If these people had somewhere to go, mm-hmm. Someplace that would be able to support them and give them the
yes.
treatment that they need. Not only that, but separate from that is more medical knowledge mm-hmm. for people out there who aren't yes. educated in that field. So, like, you know, having more facilities out here that give people naloxone training or
yes.
even, you know, simple medical procedures to mm-hmm. Tackle on to these things. Mm-hmm. Like
exactly.
One good one is like, you know, CPR training or NVCI. That way, you know, you know how to handle a situation when it happens. And,
yep.
you know, I know a person who passed away due to, you know, a drug overdose, and it impacted us here a whole lot. And we still know what people are going through these days as well, because if you have someone there who is sober that you can, you know, safely use mm-hmm. with, well, not with them, but use around.
Yes.
Well, it would be better than having your best friend who's also addicted, you know, just, doing Excuse the same me. Thing with you. So, yeah,
it's a tough one, eh?
It's a tough one, exactly. So. Yeah, if anything, you know, more programs rather than the 72 hours thing, like that's not helping anyone at all.
No, not at all.
So, I'd say like more programs
and more maybe more outreach people as well, right?
Yes.
You know, the executive director and I were, Bruce Oak, were talking, and I said, what do you think? There's no cure, absolute cure for anyone. It's a matter of individual, you know, what helps each individual and stuff. He said, he told me that if there's one thing after people get through treatment or on their way, they need permanent housing, right? And housing with supports. But if you I have a person who's gone through treatment, go back on the streets or go into precarious housing. All that's going to do is exacerbate the situation. And I'm a good old housing first guy, and that's where I cut my teeth on housing and all this kind of stuff. And I believe that housing with supports is an answer. Perhaps after treatment, but we do. My firm belief is put a person in housing and then work on their addictions, on their trauma, on mental health, and their trauma, and all that kind of stuff. And I think if you have a base on your feet and you have an apartment and you're secure in that apartment and you're not stressing about it, I think that is a good step in probably helping folks get over. That's just my. What is your opinion on my opinion on that?
Well, my opinion on that is, you know, it's not that, you know, get the people off the streets first and
yes.
Give them the opportunity to pursue in that part of the journey where they
exactly.
have a choice to either, you know, go through a program that gets them the help they need, or if it's up to them to, you know, do whatever they want with the second choice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
for sure. And, you know, my very first job after 2.5 years of homelessness and 2.5 years in recovery was as an intensive case manager in the at-home safe swap program. It was a federal government grant program in Winnipeg, which is in five cities, $110 million program. But in Winnipeg, there were 500 people interviewed for housing, and they got housing with supports and everything. And the other 250 of the 500 were seen every 3 months and given $30. Like, woohoo. I ended up in that category. I did not get housing. I was really upset about it. But my first job was as a case manager. And ironically, you know, 12 of my participants happened to be people I knew from my days at Salvation Army who got out in front of me and got part of the program, whereas I was rejected. But I saw so many times... I saw people struggling, you know, with addictions, and if they did not have, if they would not have had the support, they would have been certainly back on the street or worse. I know that supports are such a huge issue when it comes to mental health and addictions, and both aspects of things, you know, need supports to get people through. I don't think that anybody can do anything without supports. You know, what's your opinion on that?
My opinion of that, well, with your ending sentence there, I do agree. You know, it's more hard to ask for help than it is to you know,
it is.
Like, do it on your own, right?
It is. And you know what, I get asked all the time, why didn't you go for help? Well, when you're out there, I was too stubborn, right? I'd made $200,000 a year. I don't need help from anybody. But meanwhile, I was really, really sick, lost 32 pounds, got mentally and physically ill, worse mentally ill than I was before, and physically ill. But would I ask for help? No, not in a million years. Actually, after 39 months, I actually had to. I walked up to Health Sciences Center, and as a homeless person, I was rejected, which just made matters worse because I was homeless. But it's so hard to ask for help. I think one of the jobs of the outreach people out there is to actually bring people in. And if possible, I would think I would say if somebody would reach out and touch me on the shoulder where I was hidden. I was hidden, and for the first 14 months, and sleeping in the car in the back lane of a auto wrecker. If somebody would tap me on my shoulder and said, "Can we help you get housing?" I would have probably said yes, but I was not going to do that on my own. And you know, you were right about that. You know, so many people will not ask for help, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like a bit of a mirror effect where it's you know, if it's hard for you to ask for help, it would also kind of. Imply to the person right in front of you, or even others there, like they'd also find it hard to ask you if you need help. So
yes,
you know, I'd say like ask for help is not a form of weakness, but
no,
of strength.
It is, absolutely, it is.
It takes a very hard strength to pull out of your ego and be like, "Hey, I actually need help."
That was my problem. I had such a big ego, right? Even after all that time I was on the street, I was this swashbuckling SOB. You know, sales guy who could do nothing wrong, right?
Yeah, you and I both. I'm stubborn as well.
Yeah. And then, again, on the flip side of that, to be rejected by the same system that's supposed to help you after you finally get over your pride and your arrogance and all that, and you finally go get help and you're rejected. I mean, I work within the healthcare system a lot these days. I'm on like 14 committees and boards and stuff. And I just see the failures of the system. But at least they're bringing people with lived experience in to help determine direction and you know what how policies should look like, which is, I have to give them credit for that. They are making moves in that direction and asking the people that count as to what they are supposed to do. Casper, I really enjoyed having you on air today, and I would like to sit down with you and have a coffee with you soon.
I'd really love that.
I love the way you speak, and I love your perspective on things. It's really unique, and I have a symposium coming up in the fall, and I'd like you to attend and work with me on stuff there on it's the human rights of poverty and homelessness, and I think you'd fit right in there somewhere. I'm so glad that we had the opportunity to speak today, and I'll message you next week sometime. We'll sit down and have a coffee.
Alrighty, thank you. And
any last words?
It's going to close out with my motto.
Yes.
Be positive, embrace the negatives. If not, stay neutral. And great to be on the show, Al. And have a good day there as well.
Yeah. You too. Thank you.
Yeah.
Take care. Bye-bye. That was Casper Harper, a young man who's been through a lot in his 22 years, and we're very happy to have him on the air today. And I was really impressed with his articulation today and how he spoke on issues. But folks, just one thing. Tomorrow I'm having my last 10,000 step walk around Central Park for Lived Experience Circle and Lived Experience, and I could keep going on, I guess, but I don't know. I'm hitting 10 years on a lot of things, and I'm kind of starting to lop things off. At this stage of my life, I need to do that and just kind of chill a little bit. If you believe in lived experience of homelessness, addictions, mental health, come on down. It's just an awareness piece. I actually think there might be besides radio people, besides my producer and myself. I'm thinking that somebody from the Sun might come around. Josh, what's his last name? I can't remember. But he saw my piece on Facebook and he said, "Can I come?" And I said, "Sure." And, you know, we have people this year, like one year the mayor even dropped by. You know, we have Councillor Cindy Garway, this is her word. She's always a big support. We've had other politicians, and they're not the most important, but it's nice that they show up and be part of the awareness piece and say, yes, we believe in lived experience. And we have community leaders come by and people with lived experience and just ordinary people, friends on Facebook. My friend Ryan Kotze, who does a walk in Elmwood every week, is coming by again. And, you know, people like that and just friends who see the value of lived experience will come by. And it's really low key. You can come down. It starts at 8:30, goes to 11:30. You can come down and walk 2 laps like everybody usually does. Nobody walks more than 5 laps. It's more mainly 1 or 2, and then they have a coffee or a chat and leave. But the other beautiful thing about it is, and what I get from it is, there are people who want to speak to other people that they've not met before, and they get to walk 2 or 3 laps with them and have a nice little conversation, and they make that connection maybe for the first time. Or they're so busy that they never get to meet this person during their – they might be in the same sector, but they're not on the same committees or anything and never get to meet. So it's a good thing to meet different people, in this case within the sectors of poverty and homelessness. And those of you, Ray, if you're still listening, Kate, come on down. Sean, come on down. It's a kind of a fun, casual thing. And Jamil always gets there at 20:15 after her husband go to Tim's and picks up coffee and donuts. And it's supposed to be a hot day tomorrow, so we're going to be trying to get done. Well, we will be done by 11:30. And most of the time, everybody's done by 11. I take my time. I stop in between, but I do my 17 laps, which is 10,000 steps or thereabouts. And it's just a good relaxing time for just to chat. And I actually learned a couple of things last year about things in the community, in the sector that I did not know, that people confided in me while we were walking. So it's a good thing. But come on down tomorrow, 8:30 to 11:30 Central Park, and have a coffee and a donut from Tim's and a bottle of water. And introduce yourself to somebody. But come back, folks. Next week I will not be here. I forget what I'm doing. But no, I can't be here next week. But we'll have an interesting show for you regardless. And, I'm taking assist training. That's what I'm doing for suicide. In my role with a group downtown. But come back next week. We'll have an interesting show for you. Maybe we'll replay this one. Maybe we'll play another one. But have yourself a good day. And it's going to be a comfortable day out there, 17 to 21. But people still need water. So cough up. See you next week.
Just as flowers do in spring, and if you feel the winter's rule. days roll by, few crashes since the collision took your friend. I held you standing in the ditch, waiting for you to stop shaking. We picked brown-eyed Susans, I took over driving. It's hard to believe. Change if you could, a different face, a different sense of humor. I stood with you year by year, I couldn't let you disappear. I pointed out every part of you I couldn't live without. It's hard to believe you.
It's hard to see you every day. You're still my goddess, and I don't ever wanna not see you that way. Have we departed the part when we partially felt that we lost the faith? 'Cause that was hard on me, babe. You know that I want you badly. You know that I need me. I just wanna make you happy and not lose myself. Sometimes it's hard to feel good every day, but lately better than ever, I could forever just stay this way. Deep in love with you, babe. You know that I want you badly. You know that I need you with me. I just wanna make you happy and not lose myself. Yeah, you know that I want you badly. You know that I need you with me. I just wanna make you happy and not lose myself. Sometimes it's hard to see you every day. You're still my goddess, and I don't ever wanna not see you that way.